What's up, everybody? I'm Dr. John Campioni. I am a rock tape instructor and a chiropractic physician. I am sitting here with Dr. Courtney Conley. Courtney is graduated from National University of Health Sciences, just like myself, as with a doctorate in chiropractic in 2003. She holds her BS in kinesiology and exercise science from the University of Maryland. Dr. Conley currently owns and operates Total Health Solutions in Golden, Colorado. She puts together a team of skilled professionals to treat weekend warriors all the way up to those ultra-distance athletes. They are currently working on a second location within the CrossFit community. Dr. Conley specializes in working with endurance athletes, improving function and performance. She particularly enjoys working with the triathlete and ultra-distance running community with a special interest in foot and gait biomechanics. Courtney, what's up?
How's it going?
Good.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
I'm excited to have you because you have, is it safe to call it a foot fetish? No, maybe inappropriate to call it something like that.
You broke up a little bit there.
Yeah, well, that was a bad joke, so we'll hopefully it won't get picked up. But
I heard foot fetish, so I mean, it kind of got me a little excited there.
A little bit with the gait cycle and stuff like that. Yeah. So
I like to say I have a healthy obsession with the foot.
Most of us have healthy obsessions with the human body in general too, but you have a kind of a specialty and something that I would never even call myself an expert in. So I'm excited to talk to you a lot about the foot. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Seen a lot of patients today, so I do appreciate you making some time for us here. So how did you get started with rock tape? You've been with rock tape for how many years now?
About 3 years now. Three wonderful years.
Yeah, great. So what got you started using rock tape as a practitioner, not even before you became an instructor?
You know, I started using rock tape actually in my first practice when I was actually in Chicago. So that was So THS actually started in Chicago in River North.
Oh, you're up in the city then, huh?
So we started seeing patients down there, you know, and as chiropractors are, you know, I was finding that just by adjusting and working, you know, joint manipulation just wasn't cutting it, you know, that we needed to look at, you know, not only decreasing pain for our patients, but getting people better and getting them well. So we started adding different adjuncts into the practice. So looking at corrective exercise strategies and different ways to improve function. And we started utilizing rock tape for all the kinesthetic cueing and driving the sensory information. And the results that I've had with my patients have just been astounding. So it kind of started like that. And a dear friend of mine, Allison, worked for Rock Tape, and I called her one day and I said, "Hey, Allison, I want to work for you guys."
She said, "Come on board."
And she said, "I think you'd be good to lecture for us." I said, "Absolutely."
Excellent. So do you stick with teaching mostly like taping courses, or are you teaching a lot of the tooling courses as well?
Yeah. So I started teaching the basic and performance, the taping courses. And then about 2 years ago, or no, maybe it was last year, we started with the blades course.
Yeah, which is a fun course to really teach too.
Yeah, it's a great course.
One of the most interesting things about our, you know, little harem of instructors is our specialties and kind of how we make the story our own is the language that I use a lot when telling people about different instructors and who they might want to go see. And as we kind of alluded to at the beginning is you specialize in the gait cycle feet, but mostly your athletes being ultra endurance runners and even to the weekend warrior. So a pretty wide range, but I'm really interested to see kind of how you work with your endurance athletes using those blades, using the tape and any other tools. How did you really get started working with this type of athlete?
You know, my population changed quite a bit when I moved from Chicago out to Colorado. You know, the thing about Colorado is no matter how good a shape you think you're in, there's somebody right next to you that's going to kick your ass, you know? I mean, no, 5Ks don't exist out here. So, you know, if you do a 5K, you're really not getting anywhere. So most of the athletes, most of my runners out here are 50K, 100K, 100 milers. So yeah, so their mechanics, I mean, you really have to look in when you're treating them in a whole different perspective. knowing that no matter how good of shape that they're in, when they hit mile 80, things are going to start to function a little differently. So that's why it's been so great to utilize the blades and the taping, especially with these athletes. I mean, after a certain amount of time, and I think that they're finding more research too with the taping, noting delaying fatigue in performance athletes. And I have found that to be so true with these guys. I mean, we're taping, you know, down at the foot. All of my patients, their feet are getting taped. Let's just put it that way.
No matter what they come in for?
Again, that depends, right? So if I have patients that are having, you know, an acute pain, for example, a posterior tib tendonitis or plantar fasciitis, then we're going after taping for pain dysfunction. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys, when they're running these races, you know, pain isn't what they're starting with, but I need to tape more for function. So we're either taping postural techniques such as the short foot taping application I love. Mm-hmm. I love the helical taping down at the lower extremity to grab the medial ankle, the knee, and up into those abductors. That's a huge one for those guys.
That's one of my favorite applications, yeah. Are you using a lot of these techniques? Maybe I rephrase my question. Are you seeing a lot of these people before they're starting to have some pain? Maybe they're just breaking down with their technique. Like you said, they're going many, many miles, many, many kilometers. Are you seeing a lot of people that come and say, hey, when I get to this mile marker, that's when it breaks down? It doesn't hurt, but I'm just noticing myself really fatiguing out.
Yeah, and so at our offices, so my one office in Golden, I use an OptiGate gait analysis system. So I'll throw them up there, and then we'll take a look at their mechanics from all different views. And then you can tell by looking at that, once you break everything down, where in their kinetic chain that they could possibly have failure, especially as they start to increase their mileage. So then we'll take that, and then that's definitely where I'm taping them. That's where we're driving the function and all their corrective exercise strategies to prevent, hopefully, any symptom from happening, because these guys are not going to be happy if they're not running. I can promise you that.
That's a fun conversation to get in with a lot of people, is the whole preventative and trying to prevent injuries. And some camps will say you can never prevent an injury because that's just what happens in sport. You can really only hope to kind of help the body adapt against it too. So are you seeing a lot of success with this kind of patient? There you're starting to, you know, prevent them from getting into the injury cycle that would probably keep them out of running for so long?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're dealing with especially like endurance runners, for example, I mean, those are the types of athletes, right, where you would see repetitive injury. You know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to certainly prevent an acute ankle sprain if they, you know, fall off the side of the mountain here, you know. So there's certain things that I can prevent, and there's certain things that I can't prevent, you know. So
wait, you're saying you can't tape for that?
I mean, you could try, but it's probably not going to be as successful.
Probably not. So, I mean, never tape over an open wound, though, too. We always say that.
True.
So do you see a lot of parallels, though? Weird question, but with your weekend warriors versus your ultra-endurance athletes, because the gait cycle is the gait cycle. There are things that you need to look at with every single individual. So what kind of things do you really focus on when someone comes in with, you know, obviously with a particular injury related to that? I'm not going to get too wild and crazy and, you know, talk about somebody with headaches, what kind of things do you look at the gait cycle? But when someone comes in with maybe a foot or leg injury, what sort of things are you looking for? What do you want to see from that body?
You know, that's a good question, especially right now, because the skiers are done and everybody's getting outside. It's just starting to get nice out. So I've been very busy lately, because I think when we start to see the injuries, there's really two main things that we'll look for is, number one, what has changed in their training. And right now they've gone from, you know, running 10 miles a week to running 30 to 40 miles a week. So, and even if it's a weekend warrior, they'll run 0 miles and now they're running 5 miles. So if they've taken their, you know, bodies. And we talk about that in our courses, how we want to have graded exposure. And we talk about that in both the Blaze course and within the taping course, with graded exposure to improve tissue tolerance. And that concept with some of these guys just doesn't exist. So they go from 0 to 100 pretty quickly, and the tissue just can't tolerate that. So that's kind of where we start with things, is what happened to the tissue in that amount of time.
Yeah. So do you have you probably have a lot of conversations with people about ramping up their mileage. What do you think is a appropriate type of progression for, let's say, me? I don't run. Start me off. What kind of progression do you think? I'm going to run a marathon. How would you kind of coach me into moving into eventually getting on to running that marathon?
That's such a great question. It's so different across the board.
I was hoping you'd say that, honestly, because I know that there's different camps and yeah, it's different perspectives.
You know, I mean, first of all, we want to look at past injury. You know, have you had, if you haven't ran in a while, have you ever had past injury? Are you symptom free at the moment? And then I go very gradual. I mean, if they haven't ran in a while, it's like you're running for a minute and then you're walking for a minute. And then an increased frequency of the run. So when I get these guys back running, I'd rather have them run 4 to 5 times a week with less duration. So they're going to do shorter duration runs, but they're going to run more frequently. And again, it's that whole graded exposure to improve tissue tolerance. I can't have them, if they want to run 10 miles a week, I can't have them running twice at 5 miles, right? So I'd rather have them go, well, you're going to run 5 times this week. And really monitor how their bodies feel during, after, and then the next day.
Is that one of the most difficult things you find with your patients, is trying to kind of slow them down? Because I've had some runners in my patient clientele, and that's the hardest thing for me with those runners. Not to call out the runners, but they want to run. So, you know, telling them to really back off is difficult.
Yeah, and these guys out here, like if they're running 100 miles, I always tell them, you don't need me, you need a psychologist, right? So it's like they're not going to stop running, right? So I have to do everything I can to keep them running. And that's when we'll break out everything that we got, you know, and that the tape is implemented huge into that. And then we'll do whatever we have to down at the foot, for example, to try to maintain their stability in their system.
So what are some of the things that you're looking at in the foot? Are there any particular tendencies that you're seeing? Not to really say everybody's going to be the same, but what do you typically see?
Well, you know, I always start with, you know, looking at everybody's feet. And I tell everybody, you know, we weren't designed to walk on man-made surfaces and footwear. And it's like American foot binding, you know? So you're basically, if you look at most footwear, and I'll tell my patients, take out the insole of the factory insert of your shoe and put it on the ground and then put your foot on top of it. If your toes are extending over the factory insert, that means when you put your foot inside the shoe, your foot is getting smushed, crushed. Okay. Yeah. And the intrinsic muscles of the foot cannot fire when the foot is being binded like that. So when I'm starting my visits, I'm always looking at, you know, intrinsic function. Can they lift their big toe? Can they lift their four toes? Can they spread their toes? Can they basically use their toes as we can use our hands? And if they can't do that, then you know that there's going to be some type of lack in that foundation, and that's going to be a problem up the whole kinetic chain.
So what kind of techniques are you using to correct stuff like that? You know, somebody who comes in and their foot is just completely, you know, incoherent to everything that a foot should be doing, because they've always been told, hey, you need nice supportive shoes, you need to protect your feet, especially when you're running, get out there and do that, you know, all the stuff that we now know is starting to not necessarily be correct.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll look and see kind of where they are. I can tell you that most of the injuries that I have seen with these runners is, you know, remember that book Born to Run?
Yeah.
Okay. My office got very busy after that book came out, because everybody got all excited. They're like, oh, I'm going to go run outside on the asphalt. I've been running in a Hoka that's like a super cush shoe, and now I'm going to go run barefoot on the street.
Oh, you just solidified everything I thought about reading that book too, is like, people got to wean into it. You can't just throw your shoes away, especially on the asphalt.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge transition. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just laughing to myself there.
I mean, if, you know, for example, if they're running in, you know, a Brooks Adrenaline that has a 10 millimeter heel to toe drop, which is basically the heel is higher than the toe, the posterior compartment of the leg is going to be shortened. So you're going to have Achilles shortening, and the calf is going to be shortened. And then they want to take that shoe away and go run in, say, an ultra, which is a zero heel to toe drop. Well, now you've just taken that posterior compartment and you've elongated it almost immediately. I mean, that is a surefire way to have Achilles tendonitis, plantar fasciitis. So that's a huge transition. I'll say, all right, you're going to take your shoe and you're going to run it, the new shoe, and you're going to run in it for 1 minute, and then you're going to put your other shoes back on, and you're going to increase a minute every time that you run. And if you notice that you're having any heel or leg pain, you're going to back off a little bit. So that, okay, that transition is so slow. But, and again, as far as treatment, I mean, using the blades, I love for that, because what we're trying to do is downregulate, if you will, that posterior chain.
Yeah.
Right. And then I want to upregulate my extensor chain, or the superficial front line. So I'm working both sides of that chain, and then we're taping them up and getting them strong so that they can transition appropriately.
You know, heel drop is a really big topic, especially that coming on with shoes. And, you know, if you were just talking to someone in general, maybe they're not a runner, maybe they're not an athlete, are you recommending absolutely zero drop on their shoes? Or are you saying, you know, even somebody who's not necessarily running or in athletics, are you still saying they need to wean themselves into those shoes eventually without going right into it?
You know, I never say never, and I never say always, you know, because sure, there's so many factors. You know, in an ideal world, yeah, I mean, we want to be mimicking as our function barefoot. But, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and you have to look at structural pathologies structural issues. I mean, if I have tibial varums or torsions or, you know, things that could contribute to going into a zero drop is not going to make their mechanics work well, then there's a reason there's so many shoe companies out there. You know, there's not just one, not everybody can go into a zero drop, which is fine as long as their mechanics are, as long as they've adapted well.
Yeah. What's your opinion on the usage, or maybe the prevalence of usage, of orthotics?
I actually just wrote an article on that.
Awesome. Where can we find it?
Chiropractic Economics.
Excellent.
Yeah. So here's the deal with that. And I always tell my patients this. If you went and hurt your back, you wouldn't tell your patients to wear a back brace for the next 10 years. Okay. So I think as far as rehabilitation, we've gone really far everywhere in the body except at the foot, because our first line of intervention is, I have foot pain, here's an orthotic, let me brace it. Okay? Yeah. I mean, there's 200,000 plus sensory nerve endings in the bottom of the foot. They need to be utilized. So we don't want to take a foot that has the ability to improve its function and then go and brace it. So when I'm looking at that, do I want to brace the foot or not? There's so many factors that go into it, but I will do everything I can to keep the patient out of the orthotic. Now, with that being said, you know, I'm posting a case about this today on my Instagram account. I had a patient with a severe 4-foot varus, which is a paddle foot, you know, where the big toe isn't in contact with the ground.
Okay.
And her foot is
so the foot is kind of turned in a little. The sole of the foot is turned in, facing inward.
Correct. Okay. So the big toe would be almost in a supinatory phase.
Okay.
Okay. And that, for her 4-foot, is very rigid. So in order for her to get the big toe down on the ground, her entire extremity is coming with it. Her knee is coming with it. Her hip is coming with it. So she's basically going into a huge internal rotation vector to get the big toe on the ground. And she's developed a bunion. She has posterior tibialis pain. I mean, medial knee pain. I mean, you name it, going up the chain. She wanted to run Pike's Peak, which is a 14,000-foot mountain. I saw her yesterday, today. And I was like, listen, you cannot do this, number one, right? But she's going to do it anyway, right? So it's going to take me a very long time to work through that tissue and try to get her big toe to come to the ground. So in that case, what I'm doing is I'm posting up her 4-foot. So I'm going to bring the ground up to her to delay her big toe from hitting that ground. So in those cases, yeah, I mean, I will put an orthotic under the foot to decrease the load on the tissue until I can get them to function better. Or if it is a true structural problem that where no matter how much function I try to restore, it's not going to override the structural deformity, then they're wearing an orthotic.
So there's always debate too at how long should someone be in orthotics. You just gave a great example of when someone should be in orthotics. And I love that too, because there is no black and white. It's always a gray area. So you're going to have a situation where that has to happen. So how often should someone like that be replacing their orthotics? Because I see patients, I swear to you, sometimes they're like, oh yeah, I've had those orthotics for like 3 years. And these things are torn to shreds. Right. And they don't even pay attention to them.
I get excited when I see that stuff. They'll come into my office and I'll be like, how long have you had these? They'll be like, 15 years. I'm like, what? And I'm like, what? Do you even know why you got them in the first place? And they're like, I forget.
Mm-hmm. Don't you love those answers?
So they've literally been walking around with their foot braced for 15 years, right?
Yeah. You, just like you said, American foot binding. They might as well have done that.
No doubt. And their foot has completely changed its function. You know, if I am going to use an orthotic, I call it orthotic therapy, which means that if I do dispense it to help offset a tissue that's inflamed, then that means we're eventually pulling that thing.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll start with something small. I'll use a certain material that's still going to allow the foot to adapt. And then as their foot gets stronger or their mechanics get better, then I do the same thing. You're going to take the orthotic out. You're going to wear without an orthotic for an hour, see how you feel. And it's the same basically transition, but it's slow and it's steady. But yeah, most of the time you want to try to not use an extrinsic modification if you don't have to.
Excellent. Very cool. So when you're starting to wean someone off of those orthotics, when you're using that orthotic therapy, I love that phrase. I'm going to totally steal that from you eventually. You are probably using other things like that. And one of them that comes up, obviously, since that's why we're here, you're going to use tape. So what sort of taping applications, what sort of things are you doing with tape to kind of offset what they're going to miss from the orthotic?
So I love that. So I think, you know, one of the things that an orthotic, for example, someone with plantar fasciitis or posterior tibial tendonitis, is that they don't have the ability to establish the short foot or the tenting of the foot or what we call the tripod, which is when the heel, the fifth toe, and the first toe are in contact with the ground. A lot of the times, patients will have no concept on how to shorten their foot. The neurological connection between their brain and how that foot should function has been completely gone because either they've been in orthotics too long, they've had trauma where the function's never been restored. So if I do have to put an orthotic under them, I'm also taping them. I love the short foot application that we have. I'll use that tab right on the medial part of the foot. I love it. I'll have them. It's so cool. When you have them try to do the short foot and they can't do it, and then you'll tape them and then you'll have them do it. It's like it's almost immediate. And we see this in our classes all the time where they'll go from absolutely zero activation of that foot. And then once you tape them, they can start to move it. I mean, I tell my students all the time, listen, do you know how long that would take if I didn't have the tape on their foot?
Oh yeah.
I mean, months, you know, and when you're treating these runners, you don't have months, you have days.
Because they're, like you said, they're going to run. They're going to get out there and do that.
So it's just huge, just a huge way to drive information to their brain to expedite or to assist in the body's healing mechanism. And I love that one. I love the posterior tip, the medial column. You know, we always talk about not taping muscle, right? We tape chain and function. Sure. So picking up that, I just like that whole external rotation drive down at that lower extremity too.
Excellent. What kind of sports do you see with the worst shoes, I guess you could say? Because I have some pretty stiff arches myself, and I know that feet are something I work on a lot. I was a baseball player all my life, so I was in these real stiff cleats all the time. Do you see a lot of particular sports where you just look at the footwear and you go, I know I'm going to be seeing that person eventually or someone like that?
Yeah, I mean, it totally depends on the sport. Like I did a consult with a soccer player this morning. And the mechanics are totally different. I mean, you look at a football player who's sprinting on turf and their mechanics are going to be different, you know? So based on the rigidity of the footwear, you have to look and assess all that, you know? Sometimes that can be to their benefit. For example, if they have a hallux issue, like a hallux limitus, You know, they're in a rigid shoe. That big toe's not going anywhere. So sometimes that's, you know, works to their advantage, but it just depends.
Yeah. Yeah. One question I always wanted to ask you too, never got the opportunity. Why are toe boxes so narrow in everyone's shoes? I mean, seriously, like I try to think that I know some stuff and I, you know, got the flat shoes and I got the Converse, but I notice there it's narrow. Like even my feet get squeezed on. So I have to revamp and try to pick better shoes myself.
I honestly have no idea where that came from, but it is the most dysfunctional thing in it. Like I actually get like angry. I had a patient come in here today, I swear to God. And I actually put it on my Instagram account. She came in 3-inch heels to my office. I was like, what is happening here?
You didn't read the website.
Wait, the best is, I had a patient the other day. So flip-flops are a swear word in my office, by the way.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. It's the other F word?
Oh, it's the other F word. It's a worse F word in my world. But I can see my patient walking in from outside, and she has her flip-flops on, right? And then she'll sit in the waiting room, and then she'll come back to my office and like her wide toe box, like shoes that I would recommend. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I can see you walk in with your flip-flops on. Like, I'm not going to know. It's so funny.
They're trying to pull one off out on you.
Not going to happen. But yeah, I mean, they're so narrow.
Well, tell everybody, like, you know, because I get in this argument all the time, and I don't want to call anybody out, and I don't want to sound prejudiced or anything like that. But I have this discussion with women a lot because women's shoes tend to have a heel, especially like dressy shoes, and those toe boxes are so narrow. So I try to have this conversation with women all the time: is if you can, you got to avoid wearing those kind of shoes. And I'll talk to them about that. So. You know, coming from an expert like you, why is a narrow toe box so bad for the foot? I mean, I know for a lot of us out there listening to this, they're going to be like, that's an obvious answer. But from your perspective, what could you tell a patient who you're trying to have this conversation with why they shouldn't be having that narrow toe box?
I mean, it basically goes down to toe splay, you know? Yeah. And if you just look at how much balance are you going to have on something that's more narrow versus something that's wide.
I like the way you say that, yeah.
And if the toes can splay and feel, then you're going to have a wider base of support, and therefore your function's going to improve. I tell my women, I'm like, function before fashion. Sorry. I mean, you know, living out in Colorado, it's much easier. When I go to visit my brother and some others in New York City, my brother's like, don't wear your Birkenstocks. Don't bring those ugly shoes you have. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to be walking around, and I'm going to be comfortable here. But it's, you know, and I'm realistic. I mean, being realistic, listen, I know that, you know, women are going to go out and they're going to want to get dressed up and look sexy. I get it, right?
Sure.
So this is the deal. Do as much as you can daily. And then if you want to go to a wedding or you want to go out at night, you know, get dressed up and feel good. But for the most part, if you can wear shoes that are going to allow your foot to function for the majority of your existence, then you can go into a wedding and wear your heels for an hour and take them off anyway.
Well, I see that at most weddings anyways. All the women bring extra shoes. I know my wife does all the time.
I went to a wedding this past weekend. I literally had them on for maybe a half an hour, and I was like, nope.
Yep. Just for the look, and then...
I was so miserable, I cannot even tell you. I was bitching before we even got out of the apartment. The whole time I'm thinking, I know what this is doing to my body. I know what this is doing to my body.
But if you have the tools to kind of counteract that,
right,
a little bit is okay.
That's right.
I guess the best analogy is like nutrition. You know, if you have a donut every once in a while, 100%. You know, yeah, you're good. You're good with that. Interesting. Very cool. So, what kind of recommendations, you know, you don't have to say specific brands or anything like that, but if I'm looking for a good shoe, for just a general population, and then maybe specifically for somebody who's starting to become a runner, they're starting to get into running, what sort of things should they look for?
That's a great question. And it, you know, there's not, the reason there's so many different brands of shoes is because different footwear works for different people. But these are always my recommendations. You have to go to a good running shoe store, you know? You know, I work with a shoe store in Colorado, in Golden. All of my patients go to them. I have a good relationship with the owners. They know exactly what I'm looking for. You know, and it depends on where they are. If they're used to running in, you know, a very aggressive shoe and we want to try to wean them out, then I'll go with, you know, something more a cushion neutral to try, again, try to transition them. But what I tell all of my patients, I don't want you getting your shoes on, you know, some discounted store, not online somewhere where you can, my patients will be like, oh, I saw, the pair of shoes I like and all, there were three pairs on sale. So I bought all three of them. Okay. So this is the deal. There's a reason footwear goes on sale. And usually it's because there's some type of defect in the shoe.
Okay.
You know, I'll tell, for example, the biggest one I see is if you take the shoe, the heel counter, which is the back of the shoe, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell them, I'm like, take a pen and I want you to put the pen on in the back of the heel counter. Is the pen standing straight up and down? And a lot of the times the shoes that are sent to these discounted stores, the sole will be canted either medially or laterally. So right out of the gates, you're screwed. And you haven't even put the shoe on yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like a bet. You got to spend the money on good footwear. It's just, that's the deal. You know, the other thing is once footwear, well, shoes will change their form, the materials change. So you can't just say, oh, I bought a pair of shoes 2 years ago and I haven't worn it. Well, throw it away because the materials change, right?
Yeah.
That's out. And the other thing is people are always asking me, well, how often should I buy a pair of shoes? You know, my runners, it's about 300 to 400 miles. It's kind of like your, that's what I'll tell them, but I'm always telling them, like the Hoka, for example, you're running on a pillow. That pillow is going to wear down much faster, you know, and that can be a very sloppy shoe for someone if that starts to change its function. And also, you know, some people love the Hokas. It works for some people. So again, it just depends on what are the needs of the body and what you're going after there.
Oh, very cool. I'm glad you said that too. That's a big question that I always have is about these running stores too. And it's good to know that there are some running stores out there that do have some knowledgeable people.
Yeah, it's so important.
So I think everybody just heard my Alexa device go off for a second. So we'll see if we can cut that out and post.
I was like, what
I
is
just
that?
Got startled right now. All right, Courtney. So, question I want to ask everybody when they come on here is, what are you reading right now? Is there anything you can recommend or is there anything that you're particularly enjoying?
What am I reading right now? I am reading Stealing Fire.
Oh, yeah.
So that's been a good read. I have a little book club going. There's only two of us in it. So whoever wants to join is more than welcome. But I always and close to my side are my Foot Orthoses book and my Human Locomotion book.
Thomas Michaud?
Yes.
Great books. Love those books, yeah.
I've read those books a number of times, and every time I go back to them, I'm always like learning more. I think the foot, to understand the mechanics of the foot is a very difficult thing.
Absolutely.
So you just got to keep going after it.
Those are the best kind of books too, is you can go back and learn something different every time. Absolutely.
I get excited about that stuff.
Where are you going to be next? Where are you teaching next?
I am actually teaching at the FCA. So I fly down to Jacksonville next week. So I do that little FCA, the chiropractic conventions down there. So Jacksonville, I think I got Miami and Orlando.
Oh, it's a tour. It's not just one.
Well, one's in April. I think the Orlando one's in August.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, so this is specifically for Florida chiropractors, right?
Yeah, so I do that during the summer.
Excellent. Where are you going to be teaching any of your tape or blades courses for Rock Tape next?
I am in New Mexico.
Oh, very teaching, cool.
That's a great – I never taught in New Mexico. I taught there a couple months ago. I love it there. It's so great.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
So New Mexico, and then I'm doing blades kind of all over New York and like Flushing and Queens.
Excellent.
Little East Coast, cool. West Coast.
Yeah, so if anybody's looking to chat with Courtney or go take some courses with her, check that out on rocktape.com. Courtney, where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, my I kind of started this whole Gate Happens thing about a year ago, and it's been just awesome.
I laughed out loud when you told me that name originally. That's perfect. It's brilliant.
We had some good laughs over that one. So that's kind of taken off this past year. So my Instagram account is at Dr. Court Conley.
Okay. In Twitter, anything like that?
I have to tell you that I've had a lot of help getting this Instagram account going.
Oh, yeah?
It's a lot of our dear friends. When I first started doing the videos for that thing, I got plenty of phone calls going, hey, you need to adjust the angle of that camera. So we're doing one social media thing at a time. So we're sticking with Instagram for the time being.
I think that's the way to do it too. I'm not so socially media inclined myself. So that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Anything else you want to throw out there for anybody listening?
Yeah. You know, I think, since I've been doing all this and getting the education out as far as foot and gait mechanics, there's so much to be learned. And so what we're doing on Gate Happens now is we're doing virtual online consultations, which it's just been so great. A lot of this stuff is just like what we've talked about today, education, you know, what footwear, what exercises to do, what things not to do, how to run, how long to run, things like that. So a lot of it's been education. I've had the opportunity to work with, like I said this morning, with some soccer players over from the UK. We did some consults with people in Ireland and Australia and Italy. So it's just been really cool to be able to help educate people from all over the place via a mm-hmm. social media network. So
yeah,
it's been fun. So yeah, so On Gate Happens, you can check that out. And then there's a bunch of options for different consultations there to get the help that you need.
Awesome. So if you're looking to talk with Courtney about the foot or go see her teach some tape or teach some blades, check out rocktape.com. Check her out on Gate Happens. Courtney, thank you so much for taking the time. I want to let you get back to your patients, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.